who has been involved in kind of an early stage as a kind of internal gadfly. The same kind of task he has set for himself in intellectual activities as a whole. Right, Steve?
Okay. All right. Let's go with that. I'm also a contributor to the volume. Let me, first of all, thank Bob Frodeman for inviting me on 48 hours notice to come here and address you today. What I want to talk about is where does the need for interdisciplinarity come from, and move in the direction toward talking about what the philosophical basis for it is. I mean, the previous talk already alluded to this. I think that you might say there's a kind of a supply and demand way of thinking about where the need for interdisciplinarity comes from. The supply need, you might say, from within the structure of academia is something that you already begin to see, let's say, in the late 1960s, where you start to get the things like area studies programs and women's studies programs and things of that kind, which basically are reflecting on the fact that the established disciplines were not actually covering, right, the full range of topics that they purportedly were devoted to be doing, right? And again, if you imagine the idea that in some sense academic disciplines are meant to be a sort of division of labor with regard to the overall unity of knowledge, right, then you expect that at least one discipline will be covering anything that is of any interesting cognitive significance. But if it turns out that most of women's experience or black experience or whatever is not being covered, then you need something else. Okay, and it's in that context in the 1960s and 70s that you start to get a lot of interdisciplinary programs being generated within universities. So that, as it were, is a supply-driven thing. It's something within the academic intellectual structure realizing the inherent gaps within the disciplinary structure that is striving toward a kind of overall unity within the university structure. Okay? Now, as we've heard already, right, there's all this stuff about transdisciplinarity. Now, that's a totally different story, okay? That's a demand-driven thing. That has to do with the idea that there are social problems, that there are social problems, and social problems being, as it were, a kind of politically correct way for talking indifferently about economically driven problems versus ones that actually have to do with human welfare, understood without how much profit people would therefore be making. Okay, so social problems is a kind of indifferent term to that kind of idea. And so transdisciplinarity basically is the idea that there are certain kinds of problems that the disciplines by themselves do not normally address. Okay? And so, for example, I mean, I think one very clear case, which is a very kind of a noteworthy case, and it's one of the ones that, in fact, a lot of sociologists of science spend a lot of time studying, is cancer research. Okay? Because the nature of cancer is something that, in a way, is very elusive, that if you actually just, you know, restrict it to just sort of one sort of disciplinary arena, you're not likely to get the full measure of the phenomena, especially if you have a sort of, you know, policy interest in it. So typically, transdisciplinary research has a kind of policy goal, whether we're talking about sort of an overall national policy or a particular kind of commercial policy. And it's been in that context, it seems to me, that most of the money has recently been generated to encourage interdisciplinary research. Okay, so sort of transdisciplinary perspective. And so, for example, if you look at the so-called mode to knowledge production idea, right, which is how transdisciplinarity has become very much in fashion, and Bob made this point that in America transdisciplinarity is not discussed very much, but that's largely because America is not in Europe, okay, and in a sense transdisciplinarity is an artifact of mode to knowledge production speak. Right? So in other words, it's only when you start to get to that, you know, mode one, mode two thing that comes from the New Production of Knowledge book in 1994, Gibbons et al., that transdisciplinarity really gets put on the table as something one needs to act on. Okay, and it's reflecting this kind of thing that I'm talking about here, where there are these external kind of pulls, as it were, that are trying to drive academics in general away from the normal trajectories of their disciplines. Because remember, the first thing that I was talking about were academics who were normally following their intellectual paths and realizing things were being left out. But now we're talking about people who, as it were, have other kinds of ideas in mind and would like academics moving more in that direction. Okay, so that's a big difference in terms of where does the, you know, the push versus the pull direction for interdisciplinarity. Now, there's a kind of ideological cover to transdisciplinarity, and there you can find that in Liotard's The Postmodern Condition. Because if you look at that book, right, what is the postmodern condition? Well, it's a demystification of the myth of the university. Right, where the university is seen as somehow the premier vehicle by which knowledge has been produced. Right, because if you look at the myth of the university, right, it's this idea that in the beginning there was philosophy, and then it split off into all these disciplines, and then these disciplines realize their inadequacy, and then they create various sorts of interdisciplinary fields like women's studies, area studies, and so forth. And that activity is all happening kind of within a university structure. But of course, especially if you start looking at what's happened, from the middle of the 19th and certainly in the 20th century, most of the key action, most of the radical innovative stuff has been happening outside the university. Right? And this is what Liotard's talking about. Right? So if we're talking about information technology, molecular biology, operations research, right, any of these kinds of fields, they originate often in commercial labs, right? All kinds of places off campus. And where the campus becomes important is as the site of reproduction, right? Because in other words, how does this knowledge go from the domain of being a kind of intellectual property of those who, as it were, can afford to fund the thing, and then becomes a kind of common public good? Right, then the universities become instrumental because then they have the graduate programs in molecular biology, information technology, and so forth. Okay, so universities become important as distribution points, but they are not actually the sites where the knowledge production initially occurs. Okay, and so the idea here then is, from Liotard's standpoint, and I think this is kind of what the policymakers are reflecting on, universities are reactive institutions primarily. They are not these vanguard leaders, because if you look at the self, the self-understanding of universities that you start to get, let's say, with German idealism, which was alluded to in the last talk, Fichte and Hegel and all these people, right? Philosophy is leading the way, setting up the general framework of knowledge through which all knowledge progresses over time. And as you rightly pointed out, and I was very impressed to hear this, right? Saint Bonaventure. Right, in the 13th century, right, Saint Bonaventure's book, right, The Journey to the Mind of God. Right? That book presents a kind of stage process by which one goes through successive disciplines to figure out how God's mind works, and that's what the university curriculum ought to be about. Right? And this is the kind of thing that German idealism secularizes, essentially. Right? This kind of Franciscan kind of viewpoint. Okay? It's a kind of deviant viewpoint with regard to the overall history of philosophy, but nevertheless, because the idea here is you're imagining that human beings can actually get God's knowledge. And this raises a very profound kind of point, namely, and this is a point again that came in your talk, namely, why do we worry about interdisciplinarity at all from an internal knowledge standpoint, right? And this has to do with the idea of unity. And why does unity matter? Because as we know from other kinds of cultures, right, from the Chinese and the Indian culture, where they have very sophisticated, developed forms of knowledge, there isn't this, historically, there wasn't this stress toward getting unity. Right? One could have developed mathematics, one could have developed engineering, one could have all these developed fields, but there wasn't this great need to sort of put it together that would then lead to interdisciplinarity as a way of getting at unity. Okay? The stress of unity comes from this idea that it is possible to get a kind of unified understanding of reality. That's a very deep, profound notion, okay? And this is the kind of thing St. Bonaventure is originally going toward, and it's the thing that the university kind of reproduces at a sociological, institutional sort of level, okay? And that's where the internal drive toward interdisciplinarity comes from, namely, that in a sense, we could in principle understand everything. And of course, that's a theological idea that has to do with our privileged relationship to God, having been created in the image and likeness. Because if you don't have that view, right, then there's not this drive, right? You could live perfectly well with lots of different disciplines, each of which develop in very sophisticated ways, become very technically advanced, as did happen in the case of India and China, right? But there isn't this overarching drive toward unified theories and philosophy and all that kind of stuff. This is a very Western kind of thing, which ultimately is a theological idea, which is where the distinctiveness comes in. Right? So it has nothing to do with sophistication and so forth, but it has to do with what you think the point of knowledge is, and whether you're satisfied having plurality, and whether you're satisfied having this fragmentation, you see? And part of what the postmodern turn is about is, in a way, to de-Christianize knowledge production. As it were, get Westerners to think more like kind of the way it was in India and China and so forth. Okay? And I'll leave it at that, okay? Because the point is, if you were in India and China, this drive to interdisciplinarity wouldn't make any sense, right? You just have lots of different disciplines, each in their own thing. Why worry about putting them together, right? What is it you're trying to put them together for? Just let them develop in their own way, okay? So I'll just leave you with that.
Okay. Thank you.